Now, this is going to be a great presentation also from Debbie Socchio. Debbie has worked in the vet sector, particularly in the adult literacy and basic education area for 17 years. And she her responsibilities include the flexible learning toolboxes area, as well as other e-content. And her particular interests are in the field of supporting teachers to develop programs and e-learning resources for students. And I think she's got a pretty power-packed session for you. Thanks, Debbie.
Okay. As a teacher for, I don't know how many years now, I won't say how many years, it took me about 15 years before I ever actually used a mic. So I was very, very good at avoiding the lectern, the microphone, standing in front of people, and now all I seem to do is this. This is a really big group today, so I hope I do justice to what you've come to hear. What I'm aiming to do is show you as many of the tools as I possibly can in the short time that we have. So really, this is just a snapshot. The buzz in the room is fantastic. I hope that when you leave, there's at least one or two things that you're keen to go away and play with. It really is about playing. You need to make sure that when you're working with technology that you're not worrying about knowing everything. What we need to know is how to facilitate the learning that our learners are undertaking. We need to know what the products, what the software tools can do. We don't necessarily need to be the master of everything. Okay? Hands up if you're new to e-learning. Hands up if you're reasonably comfortable. And hands up if you're an expert. I'm not even going to put my hand up. I started as a primary school teacher and I worked for 20 years in the vet sector in Victoria. I am from Victoria. Worked 20 years within a dual sector university in the TAFE section in adult education. So in Victoria we have English as a second language, literacy programs, and all of our youth programs, particularly a qualification called the Victorian Certificate of Applied Learning, which is sort of like your vet in schools, but it's actually a qualification similar to, I think you call it the HSC up here. We call it the VCE, the Victorian Certificate of Education. You can do an academic strand and you can do a vocational strand. So played quite a big role in that. Spent about 15 years working in the certificates in general education for adults and done a whole range of things. And about 9 years ago, there started to be a real big push into people wanting to move into the defence forces, move into the police force, and needing a year 10 qualification or a year 10 sort of equivalent. And we looked at distance learning, and I guess it's just sort of snowballed from there. So spent the last 2 years working at eWorks and have had a similar role to Melanie, who introduced me, as the Victorian e-learning coordinator, and recently took on the role as the manager of product manager of content, which includes the business activity for the toolboxes, which if you don't know anything about, you need to go and see Shane outside. But that's a national project and that's for the development of content. So do lots and lots of talking about e-learning. But I'm not a techie and I'm not a geek. So really I talk about the underpinning, I talk about what you can do with technology, and then I kind of hand it over and say, make it look good. So hopefully today you'll get a bit of a sense of the different things out there on the market. So I guess we have to work out where we are in the scheme of things. And this is an analogy, I guess, in many ways about how people approach technology. So you have the innovators. They're the ones up in the top left-hand corner that if you gave them the box with the tools in it, the very first thing they would do is open the box, pull out all the pieces and try and put it all together. And they wouldn't read the manuals, or they might read the manuals, but they're generally the ones that get in there, play with it, look at it, work it out, come back to you and say, look what this can do. It's roughly about 25% of the population. The next ones are the early majority. So they're the ones that deliberately have a go at working with the technologies. They're the ones that when these guys are finished with the box, hand it over to these guys. And these guys here are really the working ants. These ones are the ones that actually get the technology working, actually look at and identify and work out how it can be used. These ones over here are the late majority, and again, about 25%. These ones here on the other side at the top, they're the late majority. So they're the ones, if you actually took the box to them and said, you have to do this, they would probably begrudgingly say, okay, I'll do it. If there's no other reason why, sure, tell me how to do it and I'll do it. These ones down here, their philosophy is, well, if it's not broken, why would I fix it? Or I'm retiring next year, I don't need to worry about it. Or if I pretend and hide, nobody will know that it's actually happening. Okay. So again, roughly about a quarter of our population. If you think about your workplace and the introduction of anything that causes change, you'd probably be able to pick the people in your workplace sitting in here. The hardest group to work with is this one down here. Yeah? Okay. So what do we do with them? Do we push them or do we just leave them? And at the end of the day, they're the ones that you kind of almost sometimes need to manage out or manage through. The rest of them you'll get on board. So that's 75% of the people that you work with in your workplace. So just keep that in mind. And of course, these are the excuses. Technology doesn't work. Technology didn't nearly work this morning. So it's all too hard. I really don't want to do this. You know, I haven't got time. I'm too busy. What's in it for me? Why would I bother? It's not broken. Why do I need to change it? And we can live our lives with those excuses. But if we do, what's going to happen is we're going to increase the information technology gap. We have a responsibility to our learners to make sure that they have a clear understanding of how to use technology. And if there's anyone in your workplace, and I hope I don't offend anyone here, but if there's anyone, including yourselves, that is saying there's no role for technology in the workplace, there's no role for education with computers and with the internet and with e-learning in the learning environment, think about your life. Do you book your holidays online? Do you check your bank accounts online? Do you search for things online? If you're doing it, then you have a responsibility to make sure that your learners know how to do it as well. But we're a very interesting group of people because if it's built, we will play. So how are we going to build it? And the way that we need to support that building is that we need to be able to say, let's learn from each other. Give me time and I will build it. Show me how it improves the time that I'm spending in the workplace. Show me the benefits. Support me along the way. And we are creatures that like that support. And we will build it. And we will play. So we talk about most of us working in the vet sector or maybe working with young adults, but these are the kids that are in our schools now. And come 5 years, come 2 years, come 10 years, what are they going to need from us? And it's going to be a lot more than what we're currently giving them. Mark Prensky talks about the digital natives and the digital immigrants. Digital natives are the kids of today. They physically are not afraid of that machine. It is part of their lives. I'm going to stay with a two-year-old today for the weekend, and this two-year-old, 6 months ago, could turn the TV on, open the DVD player, take out the DVD that she wanted, whether it was Nights in the Garden or Dora or whatever it was, put it in the DVD machine, close it, take the remote and press play. Okay? She was about 20 months old. That is scary, really scary. I've got a 24-year-old son who we thought at 16 was so clever when he put together a PowerPoint display about a teacher at school that was really horrible. And he created a PowerPoint, and we thought it was fantastic. He had these funny little transitions about the rat, and she was a bit of a rat, but anyway. We got to the 20-year-old, and he was doing the same thing at the age of 12. The youngest is 15. He was doing the same thing in grade one. So it's scary how fast it's growing. We have no excuse. We have to move these kids. I'm going to show you a video which might put into perspective what I'm talking about. Scary. Yeah. And that's the world that we're living in. So it's something that we need to think about. There was some research done not too long ago in the US, and there was a comment about, well, you know, how much do we need to know, and how much do our younger generation know? And the interesting thing was that they said they were talking about university age students, and they were saying that the students of that calibre, so the age of say up to 25, know technology a mile wide but only an inch deep. We as the older generation only know it an inch wide but a mile deep. So we tend to focus in on something and say, this is what we want to know, and then we drill down. Whereas the younger generation says, what's its purpose? How can I use it? What's the response? And then they're in and out really, really quickly. They don't need to know any of the other detail. You know, there's both parties, I guess, we can look at. Okay, so this is the travels that we've been on. We've had Web 1, and that was really a static, independent, authority sort of driven process, and it was saying that what was on the internet was what we believed. We thought everything there was the truth. We've come to Web 2, where it's become more communicative and more collaborative. So it's no longer about the expert, it's about the sharing of the knowledge, and we all know that it's about socialising and social networking. Web 3 is where we actually then take on and move into the persona of somebody else, which represents real life but in a virtual capacity. So we're talking about the three-dimensional worlds where we can actually participate in a range of activities, but we're doing it based on a persona or an avatar. Okay, and we're actually reliving or living that experience. But when we talk about Web 2, this is everything that's related to it. So, here we go. Blogs. This is some of the different words, different ways, different names that relate to blogs. And there's some of the products. So, you're not expected to know all of those. What you would do is find the one or ones that you like. And it's really about tasting, seeing what you like, seeing what best works for you. I've had a go at some of them. Some of them I don't like. They're too clunky. Some of them I do like. So, and I guess it depends on what your purpose is for. But when we use blogs in learning, that's the reasons. We want to share. We want to use these. These are like online journaling. Think about how you can build these into your into either your own professional learning or your students' learning. It's a really good way, given that, you know, my background is in the language and literacy area and working with sort of, it's interesting because I moved into the vet sector, and the two things that teachers asked for was how to use the technology and how to help their students with language and literacy issues. So nothing had really changed. I'd just moved into a different field. But using blogs will help your students create some of these ideas. And I think the showcase yesterday really demonstrated how a number of the projects, particularly here in New South Wales and Victoria from our own experience, have been looking at the online portfolio, the online journaling, as a way of recording the events, the experiences, but also recording how students are learning. And it's the one-to-one, it's the backwards and forwards. I guess in the old days we would keep, or the students would keep a journal and we would respond and we would handwrite. Now what we're doing is we're doing it online, and it's there for prosperity. They do a number of things. And I'm sorry about this PowerPoint. I did it in Keynote on a Mac and had to convert it, so it's come up really strange. But they help the self-assessment and the continued assessment. So if you need your students to keep a journal, you need to ask yourself when you set that up, why? And if there's no reason why, it's highly likely that they won't engage with the blog. Okay, so if you're going to include it as part of your work, as part of their work, you've got to tell them why they're doing it. I teach a master's class at a university, and I've introduced more technology than they can cope with. But I've said to them, there's a blog. We had a blog last year. We had a wiki or a blog in semester one. I didn't like it, so we went to a wiki. And some of them, those that are keen on technology, used them. But because it was not part of the overall assessment, hey, we're busy, we don't have time. And I made very, very clear I was not going to facilitate it, that it was their space. So what I did in the classroom was say, hey, that's a great idea. Do you want to post that into the wiki so that everybody's got a copy of it? That's a great resource. Can you put the web link into the wiki? And I probably had a third of the students interacting with it. Now, not sure whether there were people lurking behind it, because we set it up so that they got an email alert when somebody posted. But, you know, it's something you have to think about. How are you going to facilitate that, and what's the purpose for your learners? But blogs are a really good way to follow what other people are saying. So even for your own professional learning or for your students' professional learning, think about how you can use your RSS feed to bring everything together. So I use Google, and I'm not going to try the internet because I've had 20 minutes of it before you came in trying to get it to work. But here's a screen grab of what some of the ones that are in mine. So we had, if you were here at the New South Wales Showcase last year and in Victoria, we had Cathy Moore, and Cathy Moore's blog is The Bamboo Project. So I didn't know who she was. We'd paid for her to come to Australia. I needed to make sure I knew a little bit about her. So I followed her for a little while. Always looking for resources that can be used. These are audio books. So if you teach in a particular field, as I do in English as a second language or used to in adult literacy, I found these online audio books, and they're done in chapters. So you could have your students logging into this and keeping a record of it. And it's all free. You don't need to pay for anything. So what you're doing is you're taking all of your points and bringing them into one space so that you don't have to keep track out there. Everything comes to you. There's a whole range of different ways that you can create blogs. Use Blogger, that's the one I use. And then you've got search engines and Google Readers, which is what I just showed you, where you bring everything together. Very easy to set up, very simple to do. MySpace and Facebook. It was an interesting article not too long ago about MySpace losing its place in the world because Facebook has taken over, and that MySpace is now coming to some sort of agreement with Facebook that it will kind of separate the market but actually keep in touch with, you know, still be able to do both its things. When I first started, a couple of years ago, when Facebook was a sort of a decision whether to set up a MySpace page or a Facebook page, I said to my then 13-year-old son, well, Tim, you know, show me how to do it. And he said, why, Mum? And I said, well, because, you know, this is my field. I should know what I'm talking about. I should actually have a Facebook page. He said, why? And I said, because, you know, this is my job. And he goes, Mum, you don't understand. When you have a Facebook page, you have to have friends. You don't have friends. So it was really interesting. And I quite casually now sit there and say, well, I actually have more friends than you. But it was an interesting perception for a young person who was totally engrossed in MySpace, saying, you know, I've got 150 friends, and I'm going, well, you know, set me up. And he couldn't understand that there was a place or a space for me to be involved in that type of social networking. And it's interesting now, we have 14 nieces and nephews and had them all at my place before I came up here for a birthday party, and I said to them, I want to create a calendar for the grandparents. I said, I need a photo of all of you. I said, you can either stand here and I'll take a photo of you now. They said, no, Aunty Debbie, just go to our page. So I've got all these links into my email account with links to their pages and their, you know, photos and stuff like that. So there's no more transfer. There's no more handing over. It's all virtual. And then you've got Second Life. So Second Life is where you move into that virtual world. And there were a couple of really great projects at the showcase yesterday. In Victoria, I have to say that GIPS TAFE has done huge amounts of work. So if you are interested in the virtual world, go to the flexiblelearning.net.au page, type in Victoria and type in GIPS TAFE, because they've had about five or six projects. But really moving forward in terms of thinking about how they use that in the classroom. The Web 3D, which is that virtual world, has lots of potential. It's not cheap, it's not easy, it's very hard to explain to your finance department how you can purchase an island that doesn't actually exist and have that recorded on the budget, because there's no actual asset, but you can get away with it. You can get around these things. These are some of the things that happen with the virtual worlds, with the Second Life, okay? If I go back to GIPS TAFE, what they did, one of their projects was create a, it was for the design and architecture students. So they created part of their island. They had their students going in as the potential architects. The teachers went in as the clients, but they didn't know, the students didn't know which teacher was which. They had a guy from, I think it was Switzerland, who was like one of the top architects in the world. The students then had to create the design for these customers. Then the architect came in and actually analysed their design and gave them advice and support. It was all for free. So you've got all of this expertise happening across the world, and it's everybody's happy to collaborate, everybody's happy to work. The University of South Australia has set up in their visual arts faculty an island, a section of their island, and when you walk in, it's like a big convention centre. And on the wall in the convention centre is all of the artwork from the graphic arts students. It's actually posted in there. So if you clicked on one piece of art, up would come that student's portfolio of work that they've created. Then they go into a lecture theatre, they have their lecture in there, it's recorded, so if you miss the lecture you can go back in, then there's discussion. Absolutely fantastic, some of the things that are happening. There are rules though, particularly if you're working with younger people, so you've just got to make sure that you set the boundaries and determine what it is you're going to allow them to do or not allow them to do. You all heard Douchy yesterday. His podcasts are fantastic. They are really interesting. I don't think I ever did biology beyond year 10, and it's really good to just go in, whack them onto the iPod, and sit on the train and listen to them, even if you're not a biology student. So they all have the same very annoying music at the beginning, so you kind of try and skip that and then get into the podcast. But they are really interesting. It's not hard to create your own podcast. There's a whole range of resources out there, including something called Audacity or Audio, which are free resources that you can upload to your computer or download to your computer and edit and modify very simply. So have a play. Download them, play with them. They're very easy to follow. I'm not sure if this will work. Let me have a look. No. Okay. There's some of the other ones that you might be able to have a look. It's always go to, here we go, we say don't ever do it, but always go to YouTube. If you want to know how to do something, find it on YouTube. So there's a really great way of using Audacity. One of the things that you have to do is download a LAME code, and if it's the first time that you're using it, it's kind of hard to know, it doesn't work, it doesn't save, so you've got to work out how to do that. And if you don't know, you think, oh, somebody's going to tell me. Just click on the link and it tells you how to do it. It's fantastic. So almost everything you need to do, there'll be at least one or two samples on there. I had hoped to bring my flip cameras, or the flip cameras that we have at work. We bought two 12 months ago and we now probably need 10 in our office. Flip cameras are little tiny. Has anybody seen one or has anybody got one? They are brilliant. Has anyone got one in the room? Do you want to just hold it up? They are brilliant. If you're looking for a way to capture what your students are actually doing, This is the best thing. It has a USB stick in it, so it just basically looks like a little video camera. You point and shoot. It only takes video. Point and shoot at people, headspace or distance, and then you go straight to your computer, plug it in, and it uploads it onto your computer straight away. So there's no hassle. You can convert the videos. You can put them together in little stories. You can drop them into things like Movie Maker. They cost about $150. Pardon?
They just come down.
Again. Beautiful. $99. There you go. If you're a manager in your department and you need to spend some money before the shutdown, go and buy a couple of these. You will not regret it. Your staff will think it's the best thing out.
I just wanted to say the same thing with the mobile phone.
Yes. Mobile phone. The only problem with mobile phones is that you have to have the connection. This has already got the connection in it, so all you do is plug it in anywhere you like. We went overseas, took one with us, and stood there under the pyramids going, hey boys, you know, here we are, here's your mum and Dorky, mum and dad standing at the pyramids on a camel, isn't this great? Went to an internet cafe, plugged it in, uploaded it, sent an email to the kids opened their email and there was the little video of their mum and dad. It took about 3 minutes. So keeping in touch, it was really good fun. So, point of view glasses. Victoria's had a number of projects in the point of view glasses, and one of the projects that we funded 12 months ago was quite interesting because what happened was that they actually got funding through the innovations projects to evaluate and choose and then build resources in a particular area. What they found was the project actually became a project about evaluating the glasses. So they basically look like a pair of glasses, nice big thick black things. You put them on and you press a button in here and it records both the sound and the video. So if you're looking for assessment, validated assessment, you say to your students, this is how you do it. My name's Debbie and this is me presenting. And you stick them on. You've seen who they are. Okay, they're very dorky looking, and you kind of, I have to wear them like this because I'm short, and if I do this, you kind of only get from the head down, so you have to work out where's the best spot. Record, plug in, and you can upload, send it off as a file. There's your evidence. So very, very clever. One of the things that we had recommended with the beauty therapy department was that things like exfoliating hairs under a microscope with a light, okay, you've got to be able to tweeze these things out, and there's a particular way you hold the tweezers, there's a particular way you move your hand. Put the point of view glasses on, record, and actually talk the students through. Upload it, so when before the students actually have someone coming in to do that particular procedure, they click on the computer, have another look at the video, they know exactly what they're doing before they start. Okay, so different ways that people were using the glasses. I reckon this one's the funniest one. It can't be that hard to fill gaps. But, you know. And what they did was they looked at different varieties of those. So they're really, really groovy. They're real trend-setting glasses. But, you know, there's really good things. I guess in terms of the cost, the more you pay, not necessarily the better, but the less you pay, not always the best quality. Some of them are quite flimsy. Some of them, you know, got to watch how students are using them. That's up to you. And I think EduPov's out there, so they probably have some samples that you could have a look at. You're never going to get a high quality. That's right. Yeah. Oh, anywhere from about $150 to about $900. So, you know, some of those other ones with the, you know, connections on the side, they're just more of a video camera sitting here like a webcam. The point of view ones, these ones here, oh, they're probably not that one, but the one on the other page, so without this bit here, they're only about $200. So, And, you know, you've got to just bear in mind that the further away you are from the person, so you'll hear my voice really well, but if you're recording somebody else, their voice might not necessarily be as loud as you want it to be, so they might need to talk up if you were interviewing. Back, you know, noise is really difficult as well. Nintendo Wii is amazing, really amazing what they're doing. We had a project last year that was around the painting. And what they wanted to do was get the students, apparently, you know, when you spray paint, there's a particular flow that you use with your hands. So what they did was they used the Nintendo controls to try and replicate the spray can. And they then had to create and have this movement. And they had it all online. There's a blog, and it takes you through all of the... There's a blog, and it takes you through all of the process and the tools. There's a chap in Melbourne who's created a wireless whiteboard using Nintendo Wii controls, and he could turn this into a smart board for less than $1,000. So if you want more information, talk to me after. And I know I'm running out of time. Stop motion, if you were in the session yesterday that Gail gave, this was about combining Lego and stop motion animation together to replicate, lean manufacturing. So what they had was a really horrible looking manufacturing warehouse, and then they replicated it and went through the process of how you sort of, you know, go into a lean organisation. But if you type in lean goes Lego, you'll get that app. You'll have a look at that one. I'm going to flick through all of this. How much time have I got, Melanie? None?
No, a few minutes.
Okay. So, toolboxes, there's a whole lot of toolboxes out there. We've got 5 more coming, so if you're into asset maintenance, if you're into fresh or freezing, it's asset maintenance, I'm still learning all of them. We've got a plumbing one coming out, we've got an air conditioning system one coming out, we've got forestry. And next year, hasn't been announced yet, but we've got 5 more. So we're very excited. They should be finished by the middle of the year. And the focus of those in their application was sustainability and language literacy and numeracy. And I can say that for the very first time, we have an English as a second language toolbox. So one of the toolboxes is a focus on numeracy in the trades, and it's all about different numeracy you might use in the workplaces. So, and a couple of others that have a look on toolboxes.flexiblelearning.net.au. And if you go to preview toolboxes down here, when you get to the page, you'll be able to see all of the different toolboxes that exist. So wikis, talked a little bit about, very similar to blogs. We have a conference very similar to this one in Melbourne, but we plan everything on a wiki. So all of our ideas go in there. I was part of a national Australian Council of Adult Literacy. We don't meet at all, and we plan a whole conference online, and we use wikis. So pretty impressive opportunities there. Twitter. Some of you might be twittering through this showcase, and if you're not, it's worth having a look at. Interestingly enough, some of the stories about how fast Twitter moves. Remember when the plane landed on the Hudson River? There's a guy standing on a ferry. He took a photo as the plane landed on the river and had tweeted out the photo, which was something we didn't have at the time in Australia, so the sort of the multimedia, tweeted that out to his network, tweeted that out, they tweeted it out to their network. It was out to nearly a million people before the CBC or CBN or whatever it was had actually got it on their web page. So that's how quickly things are moving. Images. You can't go wrong if you need to find images. Use Flickr. You know, have a look at the Creative Commons. Work out how you can use some of those different things. Photo Bucket's another place that you can look. This presentation can be put into SlideShare. So that means that you can take a PowerPoint that you're doing in the classroom, put your audio behind it, and upload it to SlideShare. It is open to the world, so you wouldn't be putting your names or things like that unless you wanted to, but it's a really good way if you've got blockages in YouTube or you haven't got the download capacity for your students and you haven't got a learning management system, you can get it out there, put it up on the web through SlideShare. My mum was in Queensland moving to Melbourne. left the purchasing of a house to me, and I thought that's a really big thing to do, you know, buy a house for somebody else that she's never seen, took lots and lots of photos of the unit that we were looking at buying, put them into PowerPoint, uploaded it to SlideShare, sent her the link, she went in and said, yeah, that looks great, fine, put me in an offer. So, you know, it's a very clever way of using technology to define the gap. Has anybody heard of a digital story? Yep. So do I need to show you one? No? Okay. Yes? Very quickly, I'll show you one. Digital stories are fantastic because what they do is they take the things that we use every day and turn them into very simple multimedia files. And it's a great way to get your students engaged, particularly if they're doing things like going out into the workplace or... I'm looking for one particular one. Going out into the workplace and they need to keep evidence. We had a chap who was a flexible learning leader a couple of years ago, and he, very interestingly enough, we had to give a presentation, and he was not stressed, and it was being recorded, and it was 10 minutes, and at the 10-minute mark, someone stood up, they gave you 30 seconds, and they turned off the recording button, and then this tape was being, or CD was being sent out to all organisations across the country. So we're all there with our PowerPoints, and we're, you know, scripting everything we're going to say, making sure it's exactly, you know, 10 minutes. And he's walking around and he's having a drink in the bar and he's going for a walk on the beach. And we're saying, Terry, you know, you should be taking this more, you know, seriously. And he's like, yeah, I'll be right, no problems, it's okay. He stood up, beautiful suit, said, hi, my name is, this is my presentation. Hit a button and sat down. And his presentation was exactly 9 minutes and 35 seconds. No stress. He did it all in a digital story. So one way of presenting things. This one's a personal one. My dad was a great photographer, or thought he was a great photographer, and he left behind when he died about 2,000 slides, you know, the old slides in the carousel. And they went from my sister's house to my house backwards and forwards about 12 times. And so one summer I sat down with the slide projector and went through the photos and realised that we had some pretty amazing shots. So this was a set of some of those shots. So these are slides, and what I did... Thank you. Taken in about 1960, and I converted them using a scanner which I bought from Officeworks, which had a light box, and turned them into, or had them copied as digital photos. My sister had taken the slides to Officeworks or Kodak and spent something like $800 getting them printed. I was a bit cleverer than her, so... But, you know, Niagara Falls has only frozen 5 times in the last century. So to have photos like this is pretty amazing. We have photos of the Opera House with no roof. We have Washington, D.C. White House with no roof, half built. You can't throw them away. I have 4 boys. They're not interested. But this is my heritage and this is their heritage. So hopefully one day down the track, someone in the family will say, I'm interested. So digital stories are pretty impressive in terms of what they can do, but you can turn them into small snippets of learning, which is really, really important. So it's photos. Yeah, photos. You use Movie Maker or Photo Story are the two programs that I would use. If you're using a Mac, you would use, let me see if I can find the slide. Photo Stories only allows you to put in photos, doesn't allow you to put in video. Movie Maker will allow you to put in photos and video, and then you underlay it with your text, you underlay it with your voice, with sound, with music, and then you combine it all into a package, and what happens is that it actually saves and becomes a media player file. And once it becomes a Windows Media Player file, you can export it and take it with you. So it's very exciting what you can do with it. So there's a couple of things. Wordle. I want to show you this one. This is great, and I'll show you 2 seconds of it. But this is Blabberize. Now, this is a free program. How long have I got? Nothing.
Nothing.
Okay. One minute. I have to show you. This is pretty clever. Blabberize is free if you create less than a 30-second video. So as long as your snippets are 30 seconds or less, you can have it for nothing. Otherwise, you have to pay a license fee. But have a look at one of my students, what she did with Blabberize. It's very, very clever.
In tonight's major news story, we focus our attention on current teaching strategies. We ask ourselves, how are our kids learning? And are their teachers doing their job? Our focus begins with sequencing strategies. How do they work and why do teachers use them? Sequencing activities can be used for...
Isn't that clever? Okay, so what she did was take those snippets of Blabberize video, then imported them into Movie Maker. This is Movie Maker. Then created all of her video sequences. She's used PowerPoint and created JPEG files from PowerPoint, imported them in and turned it in. So she's all the way through. She's got these tiny little sequences using Blabberize. Blabberize essentially is put your face in, find where your mouth is, and then put your voice behind it. So very, very clever. Maybe not all the time, but well worth doing. Okay, I think I've run out of time, and I could keep going with another 100 different things, but hopefully that kind of gives you a view of some of the cool tools. Nothing I've shown you here costs you anything. It's all free. So the important thing is that you can go home, have a play, and get started very simply.
I'd like you all to thank Debbie very much.